Hello and welcome back to Journey of the Monkey King with myself, Priva, and my friend MJ.
Yo!
If you'll recall, at the end of chapter 54, a woman ran out, begged Tripitaka to make love to her, and then kidnapped him away in a hurricane.
Yeah, we're worried about our boy.
Yeah, so as you might imagine from that, this chapter basically revolves around a marital kidnapping and everything that kind of entails. There is also a bit of misogyny that I think I'll get to, and just some odd sort of victim blamey stuff. It's weird, and also the return of our favorite topic of eating human flesh.
Yay!
So, a lot to look forward to.
I don't know. Did you know that I have a weird thing about, like, a very specific phobia squick about cannibalism before you started this show? Like, was
I did not know that.
Well, now we're here, 54 episodes later.
Yeah, it's a bit of a constant theme. Slightly different, in that it's not Tripitaka being eaten or being attempted to be eaten. At least not in that way. As I said, at the end of chapter 54, Tripitaka was brought away on a tornado, and Wukong, Wuneng, and Wujing all fly off and give chase, but they quickly lose sight of it. But after a while, they come across in the vicinity a cave on a mountain with a huge jade door and a sign saying Toxic Foam Mountain, Cave of the Loot.
Toxic Foam Mountain?
Foe, as an enemy.
Oh, okay. I thought it was like time is a flat circle and they've arrived at a place post-nuclear apocalypse.
No.
No deed of honor is commemorated here.
This is not a place of honor. No great deed is commemorated here.
Yeah. That kind of thing. It's just like our nuclear waste has infected the fictional past.
No.
Okay.
Unfortunately not. Just a toxic enemy.
Just bad vibes. Nuclear level bad vibes.
So yeah. Baji wants to break down the door and rush in, but Wukong points out that they may not have the right place. And he wants to make sure first. So he transforms into a bee. But have we had a bee yet? We've had like flies and mosquitoes and crickets, I think. And I don't know if we had a bee.
And cute little bee.
Yeah, so he flies inside. And the monster is inside. And she has two maids serving her. And she asks them to summon Tripitaka. So what she wants is for Tripitaka to stay and live here with her. For once, she is not trying to eat him.
Well, yeah, as you said.
Yeah. And she offers him some food, and it's a choice of vegetarian or meat buns. And he asks what's in them. And the meat ones are human flesh.
Of course.
The vegetarian ones are red bean vegetable paste. Flesh. I feel like red bean paste is probably like an attempt at human flesh substitute.
Yeah, like, you know, insane. I think there is a company out there that does vegan human flesh.
Is it like, I don't, the thing that people say about human flesh is that it tastes like pork. So is it just like an edgy rebranding of vegan sausages?
Basically, I think, but like with maybe with Satan involved, it's
Yeah, I like Tripitaka's response to this, though, because his only response is to say he's a vegetarian.
Actually, that was one of the, again, with the weird cannibalism thing, one of the reasons There were many reasons I wanted to be a vegetarian when I was a kid, and I was never like allowed, and meat was smuggled into my dishes and whatnot. But one of the reasons I wanted to be one when I was little was I was terrified of accidentally eating human flesh.
Well, you know, it could happen to any of us.
I mean, one bad sausage and yeah, you're basically Hannibal at that point.
I mean, there's, did you ever see that documentary Sweeney Todd?
Yeah, it's a slippery slope.
Mm.
Or a slippery chute down to the meat pie basement.
Yeah, so
that's where it came from.
From Sweeney Todd.
No, but like sort of by, because my dad told a version of the story.
Okay.
My dad's stories were often horrifying, and he was also one of these people who just liked lying to children for the crack, and not in a horrible way, but in a kind of like, I genuinely believed for many years that the park closed at 3 p.m.
So, nice. Because
he wasn't able to take us, and it was the sort of, you know, not like normal lies to kids, like, you know, you're gonna, if you stay in the bathtub, you're going to, you know, be sucked down the drain and end up in the domain of the mole people who will skin and eat you.
Yeah, normal things.
My childhood was fine. That's a lie. I've been in therapy for many years, but it's not because of
I can edit this out if you want, but I'm reminded of the fact that you told me before that I remind you strongly of your dad.
That was okay. First of all, that was before you started transitioning, and second of all, it was just one particular photo we have of him as a young man with a parrot that we have. We don't know where the parrot is from, and it's the source of some mystery and frustration.
I'm curious. I would like to see this photo if it is obtainable still.
Possibly. When I'm down home, I will take a I will take a photo for you. Though it's a pretty good photo. I'm a little annoyed that but I do this bit in my stand-up about like my family just being so ludicrously academic and intellectually accomplished, and this wall of graduation photos, and then me, college dropout who became a clown. There's a picture of me age 12 and a horse. You know, that's my peak achievement. That's what, yeah. Being an animal. But they replaced the picture of me age 12 on a horse with the one of my dad with a parrot. I'm like, all right, fair enough. He died, you know, so that's it's probably, you know, you can get a picture of me age 30 possibly near a horse at any time. There's only one moment in time where my dad had a mystery parrot, so let's commemorate that.
Oh I think we were doing anyway. Some sort of podcaster or something.
Back to Ming Dynasty China and the fucking beyond human flesh. Bao bun. Or not bao bun, what do you call it? I mean, I don't know.
The translation here just uses the word bun. It doesn't specify any particular type.
Yeah, so fake human flesh bun, go.
Yeah, so as I said, Tripitaka just kind of casually says back that he's a vegetarian as a response. And the monster tries to flirt with him a bit, and Wukong is having none of that, and he immediately attacks her.
Yeah, take your hands off my man. This is our stupid monk. We're protecting him.
Yeah.
Get your own stupid monk. Consensually, hopefully. I have some names.
Wukong... is jealous, and he attacks her, and she exhales mist into the room as a kind of a smoke screen. She tells her maids to take Tripitaka away, and she picks up her weapon, which is a steel trident. So her and Wukong fight their way out of the cave, and Baji joins in with the fight, and he shouts, let me beat up this bitch.
Wow.
We love Baji.
Yeah.
Although I do have a thing I want to say about the language, which is just that it's hard. I think it's probably hard to judge. Like the pilgrims do insult the monsters they fight a lot. But it's usually in this translation. They usually call them things like fiend, which doesn't have much of a bite to it in contemporary English, while like bitch does. Like if someone tried to call you a fiend, you'd probably just think they were very strange rather than be insulted.
I'd probably not exactly take it as a compliment, but sort of as a mark of honor.
Yeah. So it's a thing where I don't know what the original text is like, and I haven't gone, and I'm not really going to go and cross-reference a bunch of translations over this particular point, but it did make me think for a bit of like, you know, how it would have been written and read originally. If he was translating, okay, it might be a gendered insult, but it mightn't be particularly harsher than fiend would have been, perhaps.
Maybe.
You could have been translating for, you know, concentrating on meaning and not really considered the severity.
Or maybe Anthony was a big old misogynist.
I mean, lots of people are.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't really have any conclusion here. I just kind of, rather than just, it's like, it does come across as like misogynist in a way, but I kind of wanted to also couch that it's hard to know what the original impact of words used would have been when don't even know a word of the original language.
Okay, so what happens here is that the two rapists kill each other and then everyone else celebrates over human corn?
Not quite. So she shoots fire from her nostrils, smoke from her mouth, duplicates her trident into three, wielded by, I quote, who knows how many hands, and fights Wukong and Baji simultaneously.
Okay.
And she recognizes Sun Wukong. She knows
No, I'm not doing that joke.
The joke? What?
I was going to say something along the lines of handsy, but then I remembered that I'm not.
Yeah, okay. Fair enough. No. She recognizes Wukong. She knows his name and she says, I recognize you, but you don't recognize me. And she claims that even Buddha is afraid of me. And she does, to her credit, manage to hold off the two of them for a long time until she finally gets an opening and manages to stab Wukong in the head once, causing him to retreat in pain, and Baji follows him.
Brain freeze. God, the ice. I don't know. Ow, is all I can say.
Yeah, it's like Baji can't see
lobotomies.
Well... Baji can't see any visible wound on him, but Wukong is in agony, and this is the first time he's been like seriously hurt by anything, pretty much. Baji, in his usual tact, suggests maybe it's a brain tumor.
Ah, could be.
But so with their best fighter incapacitated, the disciples decide to rest for the night and figure out what to do in the morning. So the monster, on the other hand, lights some candles and some incense and gets her bedroom nice and ready and invites Tripitaka in for a fucking.
That makes she invite it? No, nothing about the situation is good.
See, so Tripitaka doesn't like resist being summoned, but he refuses to speak a word and he just keeps his head down and averts his eye, and she basically just kind of sits in the bed and tries to seduce him. She doesn't, you know, physically try and force him. This is a kind of a poem contrasting her trying to be seductive. I'm tired, I'm sorry. And him just kind of shutting down entirely over it. I just got to read two of the lines, which is, one was like soft jade and warm perfume. One seemed like cold ashes or dried wood. That's how sexy Tripitaka is. He's like dried wood.
I mean, also he did see her turn into like a literal monster.
Yeah.
Although, like, I don't know, does Tripitaka give off slight monster fucking vibes? I feel like this might be something that evolves years down the line post this trip.
I mean,
you know, and I hope he gets the opportunity.
I don't think he's an anything fucking person, to be honest, as yeah. we'll get to be honest. But
well, we do know that he's never come in his life.
Yes.
Which seems biologically unlikely, but anyway.
As opposed to everything else in this novel, which is perfectly biologically possible.
Well, I mean, yeah, I know, but you're just kind of taking liberties. It's like an adventure where nobody goes to the bathroom. Which I guess it's not talked about a lot in adventure books in general. I don't know why I said that, but it just feels like, yeah, I don't know. I'm more willing to suspend my disbelief about like evil flesh-eating monsters lurking behind every corner and Guan Yin somehow having patience for this fucking idiot after all these years than I am someone like, for example, claiming in the middle of the narrative that they have never in their life farted. You know, there's just a different level there.
Yeah, that's fair. There's the mundane aspects of the story and the fantastical aspects of the story.
Yeah, I mean, like, if it was a monster who said, I have never farted, I might go, okay, I know nothing of monster anatomy. But if it's like just some guy, unless there's some sort of spiritually significant thing behind it that I don't know unless there's like some intervention from the divine, I feel like that's just a thing that happens, you know.
Yeah, I mean, there is literally a lot of intervention from the divine in Tripitaka's life.
True. I'm just gonna apply that to, like, you know, the universe does not want Tripitaka to come ever.
Yeah.
I'll wave my hands over that. I don't want to say wave my hands over that situation. And back to the attempted marital rape, I guess.
Yeah, sure. So if you want Tripitaka's opinion on monster fucking, or at least fucking this monster, within the poem, he also calls her a powdered cadaver.
Oh. Ouch. That's how catty Tripitaka can be.
So by midnight, she's gotten fed up of him refusing to fuck her and tells her maids to tie him up and throw him out into the corridor for the night. So in the morning, the pain in Wukong's head has been died down to an itch. And Baji suggests letting the monster stab him in the head again to scratch it. And Wukong, fed up of him, just spits at him and says, go, go, go. To which Baji replies, go, go, go. But it was Master last night who went wild, wild, wild.
Oh, no.
He's fully convinced that Tripitaka has now fucked. And Wu Jing tells them to shut up so they can go actually catch the monster. So they leave Wu Jing to mind the horse and luggage again. And Wukong tells Baji to wait a second while Wukong checks if Tripitaka has indeed fucked. And if he's lost his virginity, they can just go abandon the pilgrimage now and leave him here, because he's not like the holiest of holy monks anymore and he can't do the pilgrimage anymore.
They say he damaged goods.
Kind of, yeah. But in like a more spiritual. I guess there is like a religious aspect to that idea normally anyway, but a more spiritual version of it.
The most pure. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, my stupid little monk boy. You're okay.
So yeah, when Wukong goes in, the women are all still asleep, and Wukong finds Tripitaka tied up, and asks him, "So how was last night?" To which Tripitaka responds that he would rather die than have sex. I'm not joking, he actually does say this.
Okay. We got an ace monk on our hands. That seems pretty handy for that general profession. The natural.
Yeah. So they're talking, wakes up the monster, and she is outraged about what she hears. She apparently has not gotten the hint yet, and she shouts, "You mean to tell me that you don't want to get married?"
Well, it's just like, you had to kidnap him. His friends came and fought you.
Yeah.
And then tied him up to...
No, apparently she's outraged about this idea. She has not gotten the hint till now.
Don't you see how hot my powdered corpse is? This cadaver is smoking.
So yeah, Wukong is startled and flees back to Baji. And Baji, after being informed what's going on, breaks down the doors and calls the monster a filthy bitch. They start a fight again. This time she managed to stab Baji in the lip.
Yay!
And he flees in pain. And without backup, Wukong runs away again as well. So they return to Wujing and they're trying to figure out what to do when they see an old lady approaching on the road, and Wukong immediately recognizes that it's Guanyin in disguise and he asks her for help. So she explains that they were actually stabbed by the monster's tail because she is a scorpion spirit. Specifically, she was a scorpion who was listening to one of Buddha's lectures one day, and when he noticed her, he tried to push her away, but she stung him in the thumb. She stung him in the thumb, which hurt even Buddha, and then she ran away to here. And Guanyin says she's not even going to be able to deal with this woman.
Oh, shit.
And so she tells them to go get the Star Lord Orionis to help, which is Anthony Yu's translation for the personification of the constellation Mao, which he associates with Orion, but other English sources seem to associate with Pleiades or Pleiades, whatever it is.
We don't all draw lines between the shiny dots in the same way.
Yeah.
Shit, this bitch can take Guanyin.
Yeah, apparently. So they need to get Mao to help. So we can call him Mao. Or Subaru, which is the Japanese name for it, which is why Subaru's logo is six stars, apparently.
Interesting. Okay. This is the god much beloved by lesbians.
I don't get it.
I think it's more of an American thing, but I've seen it floating around. I don't know why I said that. Anyway.
Six stars or the... What's the
Subaru thing.
Oh, Subaru. Oh, okay.
I don't know. I'm the kind of queer that can't drive, so...
Okay. No, I just associate Subaru with, like, Colin McRae rally.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Anyway, so Wukong goes up to heaven, gets Mao, brings him back down. Mao blows on Baji's lip and Wukong's head to cure the poisoning. And then he tells the two of them to go draw her out. So they do the usual routine, smash down her door again, fight for a bit, retreat when she tries to use the stinger. And Mao reveals his true form, which is a 7-foot-tall, double-combed rooster.
There's a lot to be said about that.
I showed a lot of restraint by not using a different word for rooster.
So are you trying to tell me in order to defeat this bitch, he swaggers through the door with his massive cock?
Yes.
Okay.
He crows once and the monster turns back into her original scorpion form, and she's about the size of a lute, which I guess is why the mountain was called the cave, or the cave rather. The cave was called the Cave of the Lute.
If there's one thing place you're gonna find a lute, it's bad vibes mountain. Some asshole's just gonna pick it up and start playing Wonderwall.
When he crows for a second time, she just drops dead on the spot. And then Baji angrily smashes her body to bits, which is lovely. And Mao leaves, and the disciples go to rescue Tripitaka. And inside the cave, the two maids beg for mercy. They're not actually monsters this time. They're apparently just two girls who the scorpion kidnapped from the women's state. And so they all untie Tripitaka, have a meal, show the girls the way home, burn down the cave, and hit the road again.
Standard leaving a natural place procedure.
Yeah.
You know, just leave no trace, then burn it down.
Yep. Steal a bunch of food.
Yep.
Not killing everything there this time, because actually they were just humans this time. But burn down the cave, leave. So what did we learn?
Never trust bean paste given to you by a scorpion lady.
Sure. I mean, I think she was being honest. Like, she did give him the choice. She didn't just like try and trick him into eating. Like, he was just like, oh, here's some meat buns. And he was like, what's this? She was like, oh, it's human flesh. She wasn't trying to hide it. She just like didn't think it was a weird thing because she's a scorpion monster.
Yeah. I mean, we do the same thing to chickens.
What?
Well, you know, like a lot of chicken feed actually contains bone meal.
Oh, I did not know that.
A lot, some of which, yeah, it's a whole thing.
Okay.
We'd happily eat them. So, I don't know. I'm rethinking my whole. I'm recontextualizing and thinking about my vegetarianism in some strange ways, and it's all just kind of happening in the background. But you know.
A chicken would kill you and your entire family if you got half a chance.
We learned that my weird fear of cannibalism comes from some pretty horrifying stories my father told me as a child.
Yeah.
And also never to venture down to where the mole people are.
We learned why Subaru's logo is six stars.
Until next time.
Until next time. what was the next chapter again? The next chapter, chapter 56, Wild Spirit slays brutish bandits. Wayward Way sets loose mind monkey. So we've a lot of alliteration to look forward to.
I'm a bit of an alliteration aficionado. Yay.
Yeah, fucking listen to the next episode for that. Bye.